You're listening to The Art of Imperfect Adulting. I'm your host, Amy Stone. Here, I share stories from real people navigating the adventure that I call adulting. Are you ready? Me too. Let's do this. Well, hello, friends. In this episode, I'm going to introduce you to Juliet Duval, and we talk about school and school choices that we make for our kids. So listen, this can be a super hot button topic for some people, not me. But I am actually pretty much done with dealing with the decision about school choice in my family. I'm very close to being an empty nester. It's also a topic that I can admit I really didn't think about very much as a kid. For me, my own school journey was I kind of went where my parents told me to go until I was choosing university type stuff. And even then, I think I just chose from the options that were right in front of me. Fast forward though to when I married someone who had kids and had kids in my own life, it sort of slammed me in the face that there was a lot of choices that came along with this. And the truth is there probably always has been, right? It's just that I was unaware. Even if you don't have kids, today's conversation is probably going to be fascinating to you because part of Juliet's journey was really reflecting on her own relationship with education and school and also what kind of life she wanted to have and her connection with her family and what that meant to all the other things. This conversation does go super deep in a few places. I think you're going to enjoy it. So let's get to it. Julietta Duval, welcome to The Art of Imperfect Adulting. I'm so happy you're here. Are you ready for a fun chat?
I am, Amy. Thank you for having me.
I'm happy to have you. I start all of my conversations, as probably everybody listening knows, asking everybody what part of the world they call home. Where are you today, Julietta?
I am in Michigan, Clawson, Michigan.
Clawson, Michigan. Where on the mitten is that?
It's southeast, right by your thumb, a little bit southeast.
Okay. Yep. All right. There. Very good. So if you're watching the video, you can see me hold up my hand, which is a Michigan thing. If you've never had this conversation with a Michigander,
yes.
With a Michigander, then you don't know, but that's how they navigate. So very, very good. All right. So second question, warm up question. What is the last compliment that you gave to somebody, words of kindness, anything, even if it was a small thing, maybe just even earlier today?
I worked with a young gal who applied for a position to be an instructor, and she was doubting herself. And as I worked with her for 3 days, I'm like, you are the perfect person to be an instructor, kind, compassionate, and ready to help people. So
awesome. I love that. Oh, good, good, good. Okay. Topic of the day is we're going to talk about school and we're going to talk about making schooling choices for your family, which is not an easy thing to do. You and your family made a change with how you handle schooling in 2020. Can I start by asking questions about your family? Like,
there's
crazy
absolutely.
Questions. Okay. All right. Very good. So you and I just met today, just moments ago.
Yes.
So these are super basic questions. I just don't want to assume anything or even more hilarious would be to discover it 3/4 of the way through the interview. So let's start with this. Are you married? And is it what you would call like a traditional heteronormative marriage, or what's your relationship status here?
Yes. My husband and I have been together for almost 20 years.
Okay.
And we have two boys. They're 11 and 6.
All right. That was my next question. So two boys, 11 and 6.
Uh-huh.
So you made a change in 2020. So they would have been younger. Math. Okay. So 5. So they're 5 and 1 was about where
yes,
they were
exactly.
In 2020.
Yes.
All right. So at that point when they were 5 and 1, what schools were they in?
So my older son had been in Montessori, in a Montessori setup for about 3 years at that point, maybe 2.5. He was going closer to 6. So we were switching. He was aging out of the Montessori program, and we were looking for an elementary school to go to first grade, which would have been September 2020.
All right, so right in the middle of all
yes.
the confusion and chaos.
Yes.
And then the baby was just in daycare, nursery.
Yes, he was he was 1 year old. And thanks to my job, I was able to take some time off of work. So I took almost 2 years in about, I think it started like April 2020. I took 2 years. So I stayed home with him.
All right, very good. Okay, so I'm going to shift the topic a teeny tiny bit, and then we'll come back to talking about what you guys did. I want to go way back in time and talk about what type of schooling you did as a child. So, like, did you go to like an in-person, face-to-face traditional school, public, private, parochial? What was your experience?
So I grew up in Mexico and I went to private school. I went to a private Catholic school in
Okay.
Mexico, and then I started my first year of law school right after high school. In Mexico, it's a little bit different. You go from high school to law school, med school. There's no 4-year undergrad before that specialization. So I did 1 year, and then I moved to the United States, and I
Okay.
never went back up until I was 30. When I turned 30, I chose to go back to finish undergrad, and I went to graduated from the University of Michigan in 2019, and I was set to start grad school to become a CPA, with a specialization in forensic accounting in August 2020. My
Okay.
cohort would have started with a trip to DC in August 2020, but
Oh,
obviously
wow.
we all know how that turned out, so I didn't. In January 2020, I told the school, which was the School of Business at the University of Michigan, Ross School of Business, thank you for the opportunity. But I don't think I'm
Right.
going to do that. Yeah. So it was a pretty big decision back then, too.
All right, but you grew up going to what we call an in-person school.
Yes.
And then how about your husband? Did your husband do traditional school or in-person
Yes.
school or okay, sorry. All right, very good. Okay, so I wanted to go back. So let's and then and so you I never knew that about the Mexican matriculation system. I didn't realize that you went straight to like a specialty program after high school. That's interesting. I mean, it's not just random facts that I get to learn as a part of my conversations. Love it, love it, love it. And then I also think it's very interesting. So you were on a law path when you were a kid, but then, and not related to the topic that we're talking about today, which is the schooling choices, but then you went back, you studied undergrad. Was your undergrad just liberal arts or were you accounting?
No, so my undergrad was my first passion. I remember telling my mom that I wanted to be a writer, like a poet, and she's like, "You will starve to death." So she
Thanks,
so
Mom.
yeah, so on that path, I kind of switched to law because it was kind of similar, like a lot of reading, a lot
Yeah.
of like writing and stuff like that. So, but I did undergrad at the University of Michigan in Romance Languages and Literature, Spanish and
Okay.
Portuguese. So it was very related to my first love of literature.
And how did you, what was it about forensic? What's the leap from, I mean, I know you didn't finish this path, but take me back to what you were thinking about, the leap from romance languages and reading, you know, literature in its original language and then forensic accounting. Because those two things aren't a lot alike.
So the leap started when we file our taxes a couple of years before that, and our accountant actually forgot to send in the paperwork, but we
Okay.
never knew about it. So about 4 years after, yes, like listen to this, after 4 years, and anyone listening, please make sure your accountant files your taxes. After 4 years, we try to do some movement in some of our real estate. And my broker said, "Why haven't you filed your taxes?" And I said, "What are you talking about?"
Oh
So,
my
make the
goodness.
long story short, he forgot. So, we accrued fees from the IRS. Yes. My husband was on the phone for hours. And I've always loved research. So, it was more like a emotional decision to go into accounting because I wanted to make sure that that did not happen to anyone else. And my love for research is always starting somewhere and taking my go working backwards. That's what I'm trying to
Okay.
say. Working backwards. I love finding the moment when the numbers change because there's a defining moment there when things change and things start to shift. And that's kind of what I have done in my journey too. It's like I start somewhere and then I work my way back to make sure that
Yeah.
I find that moment, a transformation.
So one of the things that I'm picking up about you is that education is a through line in your life, though. Would you say that education is important to you or that you enjoy learning? Let's do both of
I
those.
love learning. Like
Okay.
there's not one day that I can go to bed without saying I didn't learn anything today.
Right.
Absolutely not. I love learning. Yes.
Okay, back to your family and school choices and those kind of things. Lockdown and the COVID restrictions, they really changed the education system in my experience. This is just my own experience. I had kids in higher level education and middle school and high school at the time. So I definitely lived my own version of this. I have, like many people, I know people who are teachers during this. It's not my own experience, but like we all have our stories. No one came out of this without stories, right?
Exactly.
So what did you guys decide to do about schooling, choosing an elementary school and for your young kids in 2020?
So 2020 happens and we went virtual. So my son was technically in kindergarten, and it was like incredible to try to put a computer. I have a picture of him in front of the computer and he's got a blanket over his head. He's just him and his classmates were just being silly. And I remember feeling like frustrated about it. I'm like, you need to start learning. Like this isn't gonna go well. But we also realized that we had been together, but we had lost connection. So I was divided between what I should be doing as a parent, what society expected me to do, and versus what I felt in my intuition. So 2020, March 13, the state of Michigan closed schools and they went virtual the rest of the year. And at the end of that, it was truly, we had to pay. He was in a private school, so we had to dish out the rest of the tuition. And we were getting twice a week, meetings. And then I think they were offering like daily support, but no one said anything about it. So it was just twice a week and full charge, full tuition, as if we were in person. So come to the, August, when they send you the paperwork to sign up for the following year. The state of Michigan was still going about the mask, no mask. There was a lot of back and forth. No one knew what was happening. There was a lot about the technology of it. So it felt very chaotic. And I was off of work. So I'm like, why don't we just try it for a year? Turn back to 2019, I had started thinking about homeschooling, but it wasn't something that I grew up with. I mean, I think in Mexico, I've met one person that like chose to homeschool, and it was nothing something it was never something we knew about. So I was afraid naturally to go against it. My whole life being in aviation as a flight attendant, I wanted to be normal. Like I wanted to fit within the regular 9 to 5, but my job, it's not normal. So by having my children in the school system, I felt like I was achieving some of that normalcy. I was like, okay, this is good. But then, things happen. And so we just said, we're going to try for a year and see what happens. And we never turn back.
All right, so there's a lot to unpack here because it's just a lot of details,
Yes.
and so we'll go through it. One of my favorite stories from lockdown from my own life, a friend of mine that I have, I may have shared this on the podcast before, but it's good enough to share it again. I had a friend at the time who had kids that were much younger than mine. He had a kid in preschool, so like you, tuition, right? Paying tuition because, and so he calls me one day and he says, "Hey, I don't, I'm having trouble figuring this out." He's like, "Amy, how can I, work from home and do remote school, with my kid because we're on lockdown?" And I was like, "Wait a minute, your kid is like three." I was like, "Preschool? What is?" I was like, "I don't even understand. Like, the whole point of preschool for me was to send my children out of the house so that I could go to the grocery store without kids, grabbing onto me." I was like, "So wait a second, are we talking about virtual preschool?" And I was like, "Why would anybody do that?" And he just like similarly was like, "Well, I've paid for it. I've paid for it, and I have to keep paying for it." And I was like, but three, there's no way for that kid to manage it himself. I was like, no. Like, I don't think there is a way that this happens all at the same time. I'm sorry. Like, it's like you're going to hire somebody to sit with your kid in the laptop or, give up on I was just like, virtual preschool. All right. And on the flip side, honestly, I can see it as a, like, if you were a business owner and your business is the daycare, or your business is the nursery school, or your business is the private school, your finances are that you need to run your business. And so if you're going to keep paying your teachers and keep paying your rent and keep paying your insurance, none of those costs changed just when they said, "Hey, you're not allowed to bring people face to face." So it was such a weird time to
Very
be
difficult.
alive and to go through this. And it really highlighted a lot of the changes. So you guys are doing virtual preschool, I'm virtual kindergarten, and you decide this is not working. All right. So one of the things that I was curious about was whether or not you had been considering homeschooling before any of this happened. So 2019, when the world was pre-pandemic, the pandemic was the stuff of movies and sci-fi books, was not on our horizon. You were already thinking about it. What were the things that were going through your mind about making that decision? What were the things that you were thinking about, just in a general sense, about what was important to you about school, and then also, I guess, family, like that. So, okay. So let's talk a little bit about that.
Yeah, it's such a great question though, because by then, so 2019, my son is born, my youngest is born in May 2019. So I started doing the things again, you know, the newborn stage, and I realized the car seat just got so heavy. I was doing the things. I was dropping off my son, I was picking him up, and then after that we were going to Chinese. My oldest son had been in Chinese lessons for what? Don't ask me. I still wonder why I did that. But we were going to Chinese lessons after school, and then we were going sometimes to swim in martial arts. So I was doing all the things. We were
So
busy,
extracurricular
yes,
activities,
to
school.
make sure that he had gotten like the best chances at education, at success. Like I was going for it. And I knew languages had helped me. So again, I'm going from my own experience. I speak three languages. Spanish is my native, then English, and then Portuguese. So I knew that they were important. So we're doing the things. And then May 2019, July 2019. And I just feel the heaviness of, can I do this with a second child for another 10 years? Like, can I do this running around for 10 years? Is it worth it? And I was just questioning, like, why am I doing this? I was working. I was paying probably back then between tuition and the extracurriculars. We were looking at maybe $1,500 a month on just activities. And I was depleted at the end of the day. My husband was depleted. The kids were depleted. And we spent zero time together, like zero quality time together. We were just in the car, going from one thing to another. And I started asking the question, but I truly felt fear by actually answering my own question, because I knew that the answer would be no, I do not want to do this for the next 10 years. No, I truly do not see myself making it, you know, through the next 10 years like this. And no, I do not want to be away from them, because because I had to pay for that, because we had to come up with that income on top of our regular expenses. So there were a lot of questions, but there was also a lot of fear about doing something different.
Okay.
And that's when 2019, I met a homeschool mom, and she was so kind to open to a window. It truly was a window into a world I knew nothing about. So I just started asking questions, and she was great to show me her routine, share her story, and just kind of like it put something in my brain. And then I share it with my husband. I'm like, what if we homeschool? We can travel, you know, we can world school and go to places and learn from people. He's like, absolutely not. And I'm like, oh, okay, you know, so we just kind of talked about it, but this is truly like pre-2020. 2020 was like, it was the opportunity that we could just try it for a year, because it was better to be home than be out there in the chaos. You know, we were very fortunate to have the opportunity to try that because of my job and, you know, the way our schedules worked out and stuff like that. But I like to say that I'd still be here if it hadn't been for 2020, but I think it would have taken me a little bit longer to make that decision.
So let's talk about, so what we're doing. All right, I'm going to invite the audience into the conversation, then we're going to come back to that and talk some more about that because there's a lot more to unpack. But I'm talking with Julietta about making school decisions and education decisions for your family, and how a decision that she and her family made in 2020 changed their future. I'm sure that people have lots of things to add to this. I post a discussion question on YouTube and Instagram, so I invite you guys to come and answer and participate. I'll be there in the comments. Julietta might pop in too. And so now let's get back to it. So you were home on maternity leave at the at part of this because you have a very young baby, but you as a you were somebody you are somebody who had a job outside of the house as a flight attendant.
Correct.
And does your husband, without telling us too much about your like private information, stuff like that, does he also have a job that is outside of the house?
He did at that point. He
Okay.
did in 2020. And then because he was in telecommunications in about 20, the end of 2020, things started to shift for him. And we made the decision for him to leave his job and concentrate in real estate, which he had been doing prior to that. So it was kind of
Okay.
like a more, different leap for him for sure.
Okay, but at the time when you guys were doing this, you guys were both really working outside of the house.
Yes.
So one of the things that's going on is you were chasing the American dream. You were following the path. You both had jobs, you went to school, you got married, you've got kids, you're living in a house, you're trying to give them everything they can. This is the path, right? This is what we tell each
Yes.
other. This is what we grow up with. It's like this is check these boxes
Yes.
and everything will be fine. But what you're experiencing is your own experience is that you're trying to do the things you want that are important to your kids, signing them for enrichment, getting them into the right spots. You add a second baby, which adds complexity. Love babies, but they don't make life easier. No, they don't. And you find yourself questioning, like, wait a second, is this even sustainable for me? And then
Yes.
the deeper question that sometimes we don't hear, we don't allow ourselves to hear until we're totally tapped out is this actually what I want to do? Like,
Yes.
is this the life that I want? All right. So that's where we are when you do this. And so I love that you speak three languages and then you sign your kindergartner up for Chinese, which I'm going to guess is a sneaky way for you to mess around and play in Chinese, but that's a topic for another day.
Yes.
All right. So one of the things that appealed to me about when you submitted this topic is that you used the word unschooling in the pitch. And I'm not an expert on homeschooling or on curriculum or anything like that. And I cannot even say that I know what unschooling is. So I'm going to ask you, because there are lots of different groupings of education. I did look up a little bit of the vocabulary before we started. So I was like in-person school, not like is what we say for if you go to a building. And then you are using the word unschooling.
Yes.
Tell us a little bit about, you say you met somebody who was talking to you about homeschooling. Tell us how you came in to that, how you discovered this world, and then a little bit about the research or the process that led you to unschooling and what it is.
Yeah, so homeschooling. So she introduced me to homeschooling. And as I am sharing with her what I love, which what I love is books. I love to read. I love museums. You will always find me in a museum. I love art. I love written expression and journaling. She said, "You sound like a Charlotte Mason kind of gal." And I'm like, "Charlotte Mason, what is that?" And it truly, that is a way of homeschooling, kind of like Maria Montessori, very hands-on,
Okay.
very nature-based, very art-driven, paintings and all that stuff. So, and I hear myself, I go through this process with her, and as I, look back into what I was saying, there was a lot of I love books, I love reading, I love museums. But I wasn't really doing that. I wasn't really asking what or taking the time to observe what my son liked back then.
Okay.
There was a lot of I in there. So as we go through this process, we decide we want to homeschool. So I go from one system to another. So I go from the school system to a homeschool system at home or school at home, really. So I have the desk, I have the curriculum. I spend close to $10,000 in curriculum in very small amounts,
Okay, so
like,
let's pause there and back that up because
yes.
people who are listening who've never done this and don't have a friend that has done this may not fully understand that. I'm old and I do know many people who've done this, and so I've heard a little bit about this before. You meet somebody and she introduces you, and you do what's calling you pick a curriculum,
Yes.
which is like a program designed by somebody else. I don't Charlotte Mason is I think what you said.
Yeah,
Or
it's
she's,
just a
is that like a
it's a
theory?
person. She was she lived in England a long time ago, and she never had children, but she was a school teacher, and she observed that when children were in nature or outside, you
Okay.
know, doing activities outside, she noticed that they were more engaged. So in the homeschooling, so if you think homeschooling as the like the big umbrella
Yeah.
under homeschooling, you'll find Charlotte Mason, you find Montessori, you find the Waldorf, the same methods that a lot of people use in the school system, like, you know,
Right.
nature play, Waldorf Inspire, which is like late delay, formal learning. All of that translates into the homeschool curriculum
Right.
world. So
And
you will
there's
have
other, they're
that.
like brands. They can become
Yes.
brands. Like, so you invest in it to bring it in your house. So you're not like just teaching from your own experience. Like, so the way, like, so where I am, the schools will have like a Cambridge curriculum, which is the
Yes.
name of a curriculum. And so homeschoolers, you, so what you did is you invested, you said $10,000 over time
Yes,
in
over
somebody
time.
else's curriculum that you were
Yes.
delivering to your house. Okay, so I interrupted you there because
No, you're good.
it is a thing that I did not understand. If you had asked me 25, it's longer, 30 years ago before I had really known anybody who'd gone through homeschooling, I just really thought that it was like, mom and dad like teaching you, we wake up and it's like, oh, let me teach you the math I know, but that's not the way. I'm sure there are people who do it that way, but that's not what you did.
Yeah, no, that's not the way that I did. I didn't really trust myself to bring that because I was still thinking from one system to another, right? So I
Right.
wanted to make sure that they have the basics, which by Michigan law, you know, we're supposed to. So we do that, we just do it now in a different way. But back then, I bought the curriculum, I bought the math, I bought the language arts, I bought the art, you know, all of the things. And my son was not interested. I had all the schedules set up. I am a very structured person. I love structure, so it really works for me, but it didn't really work for my children. And they were showing me that that was not what they needed in their very own way. So I started to get frustrated. I was angry. I was afraid. I was really working from the mind. I'm like, what am I going to do? Like, people expect me to do this. How am I going to do this? And there, my early journals, there's a lot of writings that say, I just don't know if I can do this. And I still have a visceral reaction from those moments when I was so frustrated and so angry that I knew that I was not the safest space for my children. So a lot of in the homeschool transition, you spend a lot of time with your children when you initially have not done that. If they have gone to a preschool and a kindergarten, you're away from them from an early age, maybe 3, sometimes 4, if we're lucky. So when we are back together, I expected him to do what I was saying, like, you need to do
Yeah.
this, you need to do this, or, and that's the way I grew up, right? Like, I grew up, it's either my way or the highway. I never really had a choice, and my parents weren't like mean or anything. They're great parents, but that's the way we grew up. So I expected my son to do that as well, and I didn't know any different. I didn't feel good about it, but I didn't know how to do things differently. And that's when I stumble upon play, you know, free play. I stumble upon the book by Dr. Peter Gray, which is a research at the University of Boston, I think. He's a researcher and he has advocated for play. He's like his entire career, also based on his own personal experience with his son. So I started thinking, moving away from curriculum and just trying to find out, how am I going to reconnect with this tiny human that I call him my son and he calls me mom, but we're not really connected. Like, we don't really know each other. I don't really know what he likes. Like, I see him play, but I was so caught up in my own thing. You know, I started back in school when he was born because I wanted to leave aviation and have like a regular 9-to-5 job. So I was caught up with my own thing. Truly, you know, I was doing my own thing so I could do all the things and, you know, pay for all the things that I had signed him up for. So I'm like, we're doing this.
Yeah.
And I just felt disconnected. And the more we spent time together, the more I knew that either I had to change or he was truly better off at a school, you know, with the whole mask and the curriculum, the computer, like all the back and forth, because I was not the safe space that he was supposed to have. And I started reading, I stumbled upon unschooling, which is like also self-directed education. So in self-directed education, you follow the children's path. But what happens sometimes is that we relinquish the control that we have over our children learning. We give it to them so it feels like completely free range, free for all. And it
Okay.
really, the way I define unschooling, it's a life of partnership with your children. You meet in the middle. I don't have all the control, but they also don't have the control. And
Okay.
we are meeting everyone's needs in the middle. So, which means that sometimes their needs aren't fully met, just like my needs aren't fully met all the time. So we're constantly collaborating and making sure, just doing check-ins. It's a lot of it's more work because I have to ask the questions, I have to do the adulting things, you know, like
Yeah.
find tutors, find places, find the right hours that work for us. So there's a lot of adulting stuff that I have to do. And also when they're say, well, I just wanted to try gymnastics for like 3 weeks. Now I have to do the adulting thing of stop paying for, you know, talking to gymnastics and say, you know, I think we're done. We're going to take a pause from this membership and, you know, do all the things.
Yeah.
So to me, unschooling has been the definition of finding the balance of a life of partnership with my children.
Okay, so there's a lot in there. So there's a couple things you said. You said you hit on which. So you talked about when you first shifted from in-person schooling to doing education at home. You were talking about the system of schooling. So
Yes.
it's like so those are two established systems of schooling, and then I'm going to rephrase it. Let me know if you think I agree with you agree with how I say it. You sort of, it sounds like you sort of figured that because you knew and it had worked for you the rules of a traditional classroom and respecting the teacher and classroom management, you kind of thought that your 6-year-old would just buy right into it and behave like a well-trained student at home with mom instead of, which sounds like not happened.
Totally,
Yeah.
totally. I was like,
I mean,
why
I think,
not?
yeah. And I think that one of the things I've never, the closest I've ever come to homeschooling was when we did remote school and my kids were much older. But one of the reasons that I never like thought that I would be a good fit for that is that I think running a classroom is very challenging work. Like I've always thought,
Yeah.
I've said it 100 times. Like people are like, when I ask people like who went into teaching and they love teaching, I'm like, every time I was in a classroom, I was like, this looks like a really hard job to me. Like, I have
It
a lot of
is.
respect for you guys. All right. So the system, and then you noticed it wasn't working and you are doing research and so is unschooling is it like a so there's two things that I heard you say. One is the concept of play as a tool, and the other thing is it child-led? Is that what is that like
Yes.
following the child? Which I heard about that when I was at some point when preschoolers, I knew people who went to Emilio Reggio
Yep, Emilio Reggio.
Preschools, which that I think is part of their philosophy, that it's like you follow the child's initiative. So these, did you find, is unschooling like something that there's like a book or a blog or somebody else came up with it, or did you invent it?
No, I wish I could tell you that I did, but no, I
Okay.
definitely did not. Unschooling, like the word itself comes from the 70s. So there was a teacher, and it's funny how a lot of the pioneers and the people that advocate for this lifestyle actually come from the school system. So John Hall was a school teacher, I think in Massachusetts, and say he comes up with the term unschooling, which is basically means without school, knowing that the child will learn whether you give them a book or not. So when they are kind of given the freedom to roam in an environment that inspires curiosity, they will be learning
Okay.
no matter what. So he wrote books of how children fail and how children succeed. So he starts in the 70s and different people follow up on it. Then you have Joan Taylor Gatto, which was a New York Teacher of the Year in the New York public school system. And he writes a couple of books that truly paint a picture of what the school system does. So a lot of people kind of start seeing that and taking that into their own creations. And then I stumble upon a book that is titled Raising Free People, and it was written by Akilah Richards. And the
Okay.
reason why that book resonated more with me is because when I was in undergrad, I studied, Latin American culture and history. So I was very familiar with colonization. Also, being from Mexico, I was very familiar with the legacy of colonization in Mexico. And she basically equates the way we school, the way we do school, as a way of colonizing the child. And she calls it benevolent colonization. So we tell them, we do this, we put you in the school, we put you in the classroom for your own good, so you can be educated.
Sure.
We do this for your own good. So when I read that, I started thinking that I am doing the exact same thing. I am putting him in this Chinese lessons for his own good because I want him to be better, right? I'm doing that for his own good, even though he's not into the math curriculum that I had planned for 9:30 in the morning. Like,
Yeah.
please, like, why not? So I started thinking, like, why wouldn't you be interested in that, right? So I just start going. So we start letting go of curriculum. Then I stumble upon Dana Martin, who is part of a subset of unschooling that people call radical unschooling. So if you think of unschooling as educational freedom, radical unschooling follows educational freedom, but also freedom in every other aspect of your life.
Okay.
And that was a very hard concept to come to terms with, because we're talking about freedom in the foods that you eat, freedom in your sleeping patterns, freedom of technology. So there's a lot of fear associated with each different category that you go into.
Right, because it's like, listen, if you get to pick your sleep schedule and I'm the grown
Yes.
up in the room, I'm impacted.
Exactly.
So
Yes.
that's the one that I went to. I was like, oh, that would be, food is a little different with young kids because if you're putting the food in the house, they're choosing from what's available up until they're older, right? So
Exactly.
that's a little different. But like, I mean, I was, I like, I am an artist, but like living with small children, like got me onto, like, I was militant about the evening schedule. I was like, it is 4:45. This is what we're doing because I need y'all in bed at 7:30. Mom is done,
Yep, exactly.
Like,
Exactly. So it's a really, so that's a really, so I started going through, and know that this changes and this shifts for me do not happen overnight. Please know that if you're listening, I did not get here just by saying, let me go ahead and do this. I cried a lot. I had a lot of fear, conversations with my husband.
and it shows very clearly that you did. I mean, other people could have done the same things and come to a totally different conclusion because everybody's different.
Of
But
course.
I mean, you definitely were doing the research and let it. And in a lot of ways, I'm jumping the gun here, but you're kind of following your own instinct here in that you were leaning into your curiosity about what interested you along this path, and it was leading you into this research of these people about
Yes.
unschooling. Okay.
Yeah. So I was reading, I was experimenting, and I went into like mentorship with different people because I wanted to know. I had a hard time reading, like, your children will make good choices if they have freedom of technology. Like, I'm like, no, because I was the one, the technology was like a huge piece for us, was like, no, your behavior is not acceptable. And if I take the iPad away, this is going to happen. So I know that's going to happen. So I was like all like stuck into my own ways. And I'm like, how do you make that? How do you trust that? So I went through this deconditioning process. I had to go back to, I was very invested into what other people thought of me as a parent.
Yeah, you mentioned that earlier a little bit.
Yeah,
I
so
didn't
it
push on that
was.
button, but I did hear it.
Yes, no, I was very invested on what people thought. I was very invested into if people thought of me as a good mom, because I wanted to be seen as a good mom. I
Yeah.
wanted to be validated that I was a good parent. And I did not, I care about everyone else's opinion about me being a parent, but not about the opinion of my child.
Oh, so yeah, okay. All right.
Yep. And it was, that
Yeah.
was hard. That was very hard.
Yeah. There's a lot in there. We don't have a lot, we don't have enough time to go all the way through it, but if the topic that you hit on that is a humongous topic that I'm not an expert on, so I just will like hit on it for other people to think about, which is, what is the system, the infrastructure of schooling, and what does it do to our society and our, and where did it come from? And colonization and the impact of that is something that most people my age, like, so I was born in 1973, we did not, it's absolutely a piece of history that is buried, but like there are some dark parts of where school systems and school programs were used as absolute tools of oppression and imperial conquering. So not a pleasant thing to talk
No.
about, but it's in there. And I love that you put it in there to bring it to things for people can talk. Okay, so one thing. So you're out there and you are finding mentors and things like that, and you find unschooling. Are you, what kind of support do you have as you're doing this? And the reason I ask this is because sometimes people who are doing homeschooling, they have the opportunity to not just be by themselves, but they will team up with cooperatives and groups of people who are also following the same method. So were you able to find that with unschooling, or were you really an island of three in your living room?
No, we got very lucky. So we had groups, we had homeschool groups that we would meet up with, but right around 20, the end of 2020, maybe early 2021, we went to a parkour lesson with my son, and we met what I call her my unschooling soulmate. So she had started the same journey with her children. They had moved from California. They had gone to private school, like give, school for gifted children and all of that. And she was at the very, like almost at the same starting point that we were when we started discovering unschooling and how can that look like for us? Can it work for us? So we work through the fears together. So she is an amazing person. She is a family therapist by trade. She left the practice for to be more in intuitive and all of that stuff. But we work together. Like whenever we had a fear, whenever something happens, we would call each other and kind of we
Okay.
work through it and we would peel the layers of conditioning of each fear. And really what we came, so we're still friends, our kids are friends. We meet up like weekly, sometimes twice
So
a
this is
week.
kind of like a pod. You have like a little pod of
Yes.
unschoolers. So like these, all these like, yeah. All right. That's you're lucky. Okay. So
I am.
this next question is a little bit personal, and you can tell me to buzz off, but no conversation, in my opinion, about homeschooling and making the decision is probably complete with it, because some people have re deep religious faith and
Yes.
ideas about like how they want to raise it, and it ties in and intermeshes with education. That is a reason that some people pull out of an in-person system and choose a homeschooling system. So the question is, was this a part of the reason you made the decision to pull out like a faith-based curriculum, anything like that?
No, not really. The biggest reason for us is to reconnect with our children. So I've always said
Okay.
I'm not necessarily anti-school, even though I don't agree with some of the practices they do and all of the things, but I'm also not against it. Like to me is what my kids and what our family is needing in that moment, whether it's at a school, whether it's we have been to religious-based organizations and we have experimented with different pieces. We have talked about the pieces that we like and about the pieces that we don't like. So there's always freedom to choose what works for you in that particular
Yeah.
moment. And to me, that's the beauty of it because I don't want to shelter my children from things that happen in the world, from the real world. Honestly, that's really the way we do it because when we travel, we learn from the grocery store, we learn from the TV at a different place. Like it's just real life. And real life isn't always pretty. Like all
Yeah.
the things that we have to do, like the adulting, like the bills, the works, we talk about all of that. There's nothing, I don't make it super pretty, super calm, cool, and collected because I can tell you that I am not calm, cool, and collected like the whole time. My oldest son says often, you are quite explosive. So I am a very emotional person that I've deep highs and deep lows. So
I love that
really.
I love that your 10-year-old is like, Mom, you're explosive.
You're explosive.
Those are
So,
good words. Those are good words. All right. So, what would you say has been the most challenging part of this shift for you?
Just knowing how deep I have to go in my own work. So
Okay.
I knew from the beginning moments of frustration and anger, I knew that the work was within me. It wasn't on for my child or the curriculum. It wasn't the routine. It was within me. I needed to work through stuff that I had pushed away. I mean, there's a reason. I mean, I had been to therapy, on and off for years, right? But there's a reason why I didn't continue, or I didn't want to see it, or I didn't want to apologize. I learned to apologize. I learned to understand that the emotional impact that I have on the rest of my family. So to take responsibility for my own actions and to know when I'm not right, which is often, like
Yeah.
to know that I am a person, and to let my children see that person, not just the perfect version of mom, to know that for them to know that I am a person that loves books, even though they may not like them as much as I do. So to be vulnerable, to be imperfect, because we are not perfect, and our children deserve the best version of yourself with all of those little things, the good ones, the bad ones, because they will encounter people of all walks of life, and no one is perfect. So I learned to take that work as deep as I could, and every year has been a layer, like, right, I
Yeah.
peeled a layer on the emotional. I got to, from unschooling with my mentor, Dana Martin, I got to human design, which is a mystical tool, but human
Yeah.
design changed everything for me. And then I became a human design reader. That's how I do most of my work, to ease the transition, to craft the rhythms that work for a family. So to know that the work was within me, the work, my children are perfect. As in, they know who they are, they know their responses, and to foster that connection with the body. That's something that I work very, very hard for all of us, to make sure that we're connected with the body, because the body will let you know when there's a threat, when you have fear, when you're not around regulated people. Like, your body feels it, to recognize those signs and to truly feel what's within you. So, yeah, there was a lot of apologizing, especially to my oldest son.
And he's not very old yet. Okay, so because I find that there's a season of apologizing that comes with the teenage years. So prepare yourself. Okay, so you what you're talking about, you said that doing this put you guys more in more alignment, like more in alignment. That was what came through in your intake form. Is what you were describing there, is that an example of the alignment, or what does alignment then mean? What has happened as a part of this process in your family?
Yeah, the alignment really comes natural. So when you can go through your days and not really working from what the world thinks you should be doing. For example, working 9 to 5. For us, there was a lot of search into how to do life differently. But when alignment flows, like, oh, today we're going to go to Belle Isle. We'll be going to Belle Isle after we're done with our call. And then just spending time there. And then someone will say, well, I think I'm ready to go. Check in with everyone else. Is everyone else ready to go? Oh, no, I may have 10 more minutes. Can we stay 10 more minutes? I asked to the other person that was ready to go. Yeah, I think I can do that. So it's just really a communication, a lot of communication. A
Okay.
lot of communication. That's what he feels like. It feels like ease. It's not easy all the time. It's not easy, like perfect, like you see in the Instagram accounts of, like children doing their work on the table and mom all happy. No, it's not easy. And it doesn't always look like that for me. Please know that my children do not, that's not how we do life. So it's just an ease to understand that if someone is
Yeah.
not in agreement with something, it's okay. There's nothing wrong with that. You know yourself, and we can cooperate to make it happen, to make sure that we accommodate everyone's needs. Sometimes that includes maybe asking my parents for help to say, hey, can you stay with Anthony while I take Ari to the movie? Or can someone come and stay with Anthony here? Or can Ari stay with you when they need a little bit more time alone? So it's just a lot of communication, and there's a lot of ease into hearing everyone and trying to just do what works for everyone else. Like, not one person has more right than the other. I mean, obviously, I have been on this world longer than they have, but we all have the same rights and the same decision making.
That is, I tell people sometimes when I'm talking to them, I'm like, the thing that makes being in a family so hard is that it's that balance. Like everybody
Yes.
has the right to be happy and feel, okay at home. And that's what makes living with other human beings sometimes challenging because not everybody agrees all the time. All right, so
Exactly.
I want to take a step back and talk about something that we've hit on a little tiny bit, but I'll just call it out and then we'll wrap it out. One of the main reasons that people sometimes choose to send kids out to school is because they have a work obligation where
Yes.
they themselves are committed to being somewhere else now. So you've shared a lot actually about that your family with this. Like, so you had a job that was in aviation within a regular schedule. Your husband had a job out of the office, but then he came home to real estate where I guess he's working probably from home, but you can share. Do you think that like how does that relate to you being able to do this? Like, do you think that you would be able to do this if you guys had traditional responsibilities with like a 9 to 5 outside of the house?
I think it would have been harder for sure. So, since we started, the same thing when we started asking questions about education, we also started asking questions about the way we do money.
Okay.
So,
And I heard you say how we do life. I think it's like
yes,
I
it
heard
really.
you phrased a question there that flew by me, but I was like, that is a big question.
Yeah, it's everything. So, like you said, we are told that we're supposed to do go to school, send our kids to school, do the thing, the 9 to 5 job, and then we're like good adults waiting for retirement or whatever. So
Yep.
we had to start asking the questions, is that truly what we want to do? And if the answer was no, there wasn't an immediate change that happened, but it was really, trying to ask, well, so how can we do this differently? Money had a big impact, because most of the, if you are a household of two incomes and you have to both work, obviously it's going to make it different. However, there are amazing people that are creating spaces that are truly self-directed education and that really foster the curiosity for children. I have friends in Albuquerque, New Mexico, and Spokane, Washington that come to mind right now. And they both actually came from the traditional school system. And they both now have centers that kind of help the families that are still doing the 9 to 5 because they have to. And as
Okay.
they rethink how that looks like for them. For us, it was because I like to go to the nitty-gritty of numbers and I love a good spreadsheet. I know, but I went into like our expenses. So what is it? Where is my money going? Because today, nowadays, my priority is to spend time with my family to make sure that at the end of the day, when I go to bed, I am going to say, I want to say, oh my gosh, that was the best day ever. Because every day is like a mini life, right? Like you wake up, you do your thing, and you're completely satisfied at the end of the day. So I had to look deep into the money, and I didn't want to. I mean, we went to, my husband and I had been in debt consolidation not once, but twice, because we did not look into our spending patterns. So we were just doing the thing, earning the money, spending the money, but not really looking and being cautious about how we did it. Nowadays, that my priorities with my time with my children, I will spend less so I don't have to work more. Like I'm
Okay.
very intentional about that. And it didn't happen overnight. Like I said, we went through debt consolidation twice. And if you look at one of my playlists, I have an episode where with someone that I talked just about the money and how we got there and how we got out of there. But it was very hard to let go of some things that I thought I should have. And I'm like, well, I don't really need that. So we just kind of started asking the questions, but when we started asking what education looks like for us, it translated into, so what does our work life looks like for us? How can we make this the best thing that we can for ourselves? And it continues to unfold because we've been on this for 5 years and we're still continuing to ask the questions and ask how can we shift? And it's a little shift. Like, I like to say this 2025 started with the motto, no commitments, just experiments. really, it's just an experiment. Let me, can I work just 3 days a week? Can I work more, or should I work more? Or more? Do I need this? Do I switch my phone plan to Mint, because it was like I pay all year. I'm like, I don't want to pay $160 a month. I just don't. And my time, that's if it's worth it for me to leave my house, and to leave my children and to spend time away from them, then if he does something, I'll do it. But if he doesn't, I had to learn how to say no. And that was also a big one. I didn't know how to say no. I wanted to do all the things, be with all the people, but I realized the people that I want to be with the most, or it's my family, myself. I have to have a couple hours of creative time, like you, like at night. Mine is in the morning. So I wake up around 4:30, 5 in the morning and work up until like noon if I can. And then I'm like done for the day. But I need that in order to be a good human being. Like
Yeah.
I cannot function without it. So there's a lot of intentionality behind everything that I do now. But it took a while. I didn't, like I said, I didn't know how to say no.
All right. So in a second, we're going to do the final fun questions. I
Please.
could obviously talk to you about this all day, but if people are curious to learn more about your journey, what you've done, if they have general questions about these things, where should they go? What do you recommend?
Yeah, I think right now Instagram is definitely the best place. You can find us at The Unschooling Lifestyle, and just kind of send us a question. It's me. It's not AI. It's me answering the question. So you will definitely get me. You can come to our Facebook, to my Facebook page, just Facebook, Julieta Duval, and just kind of, come in and check in. If you're thinking about it, I find this what it could look like. I think, in post 2020, post COVID, home education like changed the landscape completely,
Completely
completely
changed, yeah.
changed. So it's so much more attainable. There are so many, many, many amazing people doing excellent work, creating spaces for children that kind of help families navigate what their best life looks like, because it looks different for everyone. So just come
I
and say
love.
hi, and yeah, we'll go from there.
All right, Juliet, I love that you added that it looks different for everybody because I do think that's
Yes.
true. I absolutely do think that's true.
Absolutely.
So, all right, now, three questions. I come up
Okay.
with them all myself just for fun, just for fun.
Okay.
All right. You may have actually just answered this, but I'm going to ask it anyway because I had it written down. Okay. There are 24 hours in every day. What is your favorite part of the day?
Nighttime.
Nighttime.
Nighttime. Yep. Slipping
All
into
right.
bed. Yep.
Right. Very good. Okay. So this question is inspired by the fact that you mentioned that you were a flight attendant. Share something that helps you to keep yourself calm in stressful situations.
Before I walk into the airport, I literally put a visualize like a little cocoon around me and protect my energy. I protect my peace when I go to the airport, and it helps me help everyone that comes to me and ask questions.
I love that. I think the flight attendants are some of the most unflappable people you'll ever come into contact with. They just are like that. You just cannot rattle them. They just scream right in their face and like, "And sit down, please."
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. If I invited you over for dinner and I wanted to make you your very favorite meal, what would that be?
Tacos, of course.
What kind of tacos? Get specific. In my house, we're obsessed right now with birria tacos.
Oh yeah, so definitely some steak tacos for me with some lime and some avocado. That'll do it for me for sure.
All right, very good. That's it, Julieta Duval. Thank you for being a wonderful guest today on the show.
Thank you so much for having me, Amy. I appreciate you.
Thank you for listening today. I hope that you enjoy the show. And before I go, I want to encourage you to become a bigger part of the conversation. Obviously, subscribe wherever you're listening to the show. Listen to more episodes. That'd be great. Obvi again, please write a review and tell your friends about the show. That truly is a great help for getting the show in front of new people. Okay, but more fun for you yourself, head over to imperfectadulting.com and join the email community. You'll get some free stuff right away, and that way you'll begin to get the emails about the podcast. This includes the links for the special offers from the guests, and it's the only way to get that. Also, if you aren't in the mood to listen, I actually include an article directly in those emails. Whee! Now, if you love this and you crave more time with me, Amy, as a coach, a mentor, or just adult to your adult, numero uno, check out The Village. If you have a story you want to share with the listeners, I'd love to hear from you. I have an open application. Just let me know you want it. And that's a wrap for today. Until next time, remember, the journey is the destination. Ralph Waldo Emerson said that, not me. Well, until just now, I did just say it. But what I want you to hear today is that if your adulting journey isn't going the way you expected, that may not mean that you're lost. It may just mean that you're on your way. This is Amy Stone, signing off. The Imperfect Adulting Podcast is created and produced by Amy Stone and Amy Says So. Anything expressed on this show is offered as entertainment, and the views of the guests may not always represent the ideas and viewpoints of the host. That's me. Amy does not intend or hold herself out to provide professional advice or recommendations of any kind. In the end, you and you alone need to make those kinds of decisions based on your personal and individual situation, needs, circumstances, and comfort level.